Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight. But without further ado, I'd just like to bring you up to date with a very important announcement after telling you tonight's theme. And our theme is a continuation of the whole purpose of this discussion that we've had over the last couple of years on Ralph Point of What's Happening. And it is to address the fact that America refuses to address the realities of American history and imperialism, i.e. capitalism, as it really works. Again, this country refuses to admit to the realities of their history and to their role in imperialism, world imperialism, and capitalism as it really works. And so without further ado, we're going to turn over the mic to Brother Ralph, and we're going to ask and greet Brother Larry Pinkney, our resident political, former political prisoner. That is, he's out of maximum security. He's in minimum security now with the rest of us. Brother Larry Pinkney, and we see Brother Gil and Joel are in the house. And after Brother Larry Pinkney, we're going to be treated once again to one of our resident poets, Professor Louis. All right, Brother Ralph, the mic is yours.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. What I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black moved, lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, how do you support armed struggle? You support those who have been captured, and you fight for their release. You support the families of those who are in the death camps, and let us be clear, they are death camps, and the government makes no bones about telling us that they are death camps. They are to be released only upon near death. We can go into that a little later. But as Sister Betty stated, many of you or many people are watching the State of the Union address. And I'm going to tell you what the State of the Union address is going to be and what it has always been. This year, the State of the Union address will be a little more honest than previous addresses. For the previous addresses, all have words of conciliation that reiterate the promise of democracy with liberty and justice for all. Mr. Obama, the Bushes, Clinton, etc., each supporting the cruelties and injustice of the American empire with lies and bombast that makes the Congress and the American people happy and proud. But we remember Haiti, the Philippines, the Congo, all of Africa, Libya, Colombia, all of Central America, and let us not forget Egypt, where the president, the elected president of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi, is in jail. All of these atrocities by the American government. But, as I said, once again, Trump's speech will be more honest, real, and mean as American foreign domestic policy. And I caution you, watch the Democrats and single-payer health care, continued fracking in America, etc., etc., etc. And I need not tell anyone about what's happening in South America, in Brazil, and the other countries under attack presently by the American political, what would I call it? I'm trying to think of a word, the American political demands, Venezuela, etc., etc., etc. I've been given the signal. My time is up, so I pass the mic back to Sister Betty. Thank you for listening.
All right. Like I said, we have quite a cast tonight, and as you know, the powers that control the 180 families that rule this planet have continued their promise, their threat of perpetual war. And while the head threat, the head drummer of this parade is speaking tonight, we're going to continue our analysis because our job is to develop the metaphysical strength to fight metaphysical imperialism. So without further ado, I would like to make an announcement and a reminder before we go to Brother Larry that Friday, February 8th, in New York City at the People's Forum on 320 West 37th Street between 8th and 9th Avenues in Manhattan, starting at 6 p.m. sharp, we're going to celebrate the Cuban Revolution,
yeah.
The revolution that changed the world, especially the continent of Africa, 1959 to 2019. So we urge you, don't miss out. Friday, February 8th, 6 p.m., People's Forum, 320 West 37th Street. In addition to that, we want you to be there to support our dear brother, Raymond. He's going to be performing on Wednesday, February the 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. at 256 West 38th Street. And he will be at the New York Writers Union. So, without further ado, Brother Pinckney, your mic is open.
Thank you very, very much, Sister Professor Betty Davis. Thank you for your words all the time, your words of wisdom and encouragement. Thank you, Brother Ralph. Before I begin, I want to convey, a word from Sister Reva, who is with the National Lawyers Guild. Unfortunately, I just received a message from her indicating that she will not be able to be on tonight simply because, just a few minutes ago, a good friend broke their wrist, so she is actually at the doctor's with that friend. So I just wanted, she is with us in spirit. Of that you can be assured. Now, moving on, as always, my primary concern on this show is our political prisoners. You notice I say our political prisoners because they are ours. They belong to the people. They belong to us, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow. So I begin by saying, as always, we must free our political prisoners. We must free them. There was a message that I, and I'm sure quite a number of other people, received, speaking of our political prisoners. This dealt with Brother Leonard Peltier,
yes.
Who has unfortunately had a quote-unquote cellmate, or as we used to say in the joint, a cellie, put in his cell with him. This is very, very concerning. First of all, Leonard, as we all know, is considered by the Bureau of Prisons as a high-profile prisoner. In other words, he is under constant attack in many different ways, forms, methods. And speaking as someone who has experienced a bit of this myself, I am also deeply concerned that they put an individual in a cell with Leonard. He should be by himself in that cell, as he has been in most of the time, many, many, many years, decades I'm talking about, since 1976. He has been in a cell to himself, had his own cell. That's not to say he's not in general population. He is, but when you have a cellmate, you can easily be set up by that cellmate. And that actually happened to Leonard before, when this a previous cellmate, and I'm not talking about the person there now, because we don't know who or what this person is going to do or not do. This is deeply concerning. But Leonard went through a setup before. and paid serious consequences for something that he was not even involved in, but his quote-unquote cellmate was responsible for. So we should all be deeply concerned about this. This is one of the many, many ways that prison authorities have of setting people up. All right. You know, we're all in the process of trying to get Leonard closer to home, closer to his family, to his people, to people who love him. And quite frankly, for medical reasons, closer by thousands of miles or 1,000 miles or more, frankly, to the Mayo Clinic, which is very important. Leonard Peltier is a quote unquote senior, not only in terms of his age, but he is an elder in terms of the struggle. And I repeat, he has been in prison since 1976, okay? So I'm hoping that our dear sister Anne Lamb will talk, I trust she will, more about this as well as other political prisoners. But I did want to bring this up to everyone's attention. I love the way Sister Betty, Sister Professor Betty said that I'm out here in minimum security. You're absolutely right, because we're all in minimum security, all of us. We're all under surveillance. We're all still in prison, as Brother Malcolm said. It's just a matter of degrees. But these brothers and sisters, okay, our political prisoners are in maximum security, max in every sense of the word. We need to be very, very deeply concerned about them. Please, I urge, I do all I can to please be aware of this. We don't want to wake up to news that Brother Leonard, something has happened to him or to Mumia or to other lists. It's an endless list that won't be missed. So I'm going to end there. I'm sure there are many people who have things to say, and I'm sure they're very important, profound things that they have to say, and I shall be listening. I'm going to end as I began, thanking everyone. I will be paying attention and listening. I want to thank everyone, all of our sisters and brothers, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. The struggle continues. A luta continua. Free our political prisoners. Free them now. All power to the people. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for that, Larry. And I think of one speech that will resonate in my mind forever. That is a speech before Congress given by the gentleman from Texas. And he stood and he said about Vietnam, if they don't capitulate, we will bomb them into the Stone Age. And the most important thing about that speech of Lyndon B. Johnson was that the Congress stood cheered with smiles. And it's a chilling remembrance of what America is about. They lied about what the issue in Vietnam was all about. Every lie you could imagine they told about these wonderful freedom fighters. They sent young Americans to die, and they went and died. They were maimed. And when they came home, there was no money for health care. There's still no money for health care when the warriors who answered the call for the corporations, and they called it American democracy, they lie about that. They still have no money for their health care. They go to the American public to get money. Wounded warriors. And I've also been given the hook one more time, and it's time for Professor Louis. Are you ready with Liberator Liberation Poetry?
Yeah, I'm here. All right, Ralph. Money, 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 right from the start. Money in the brain, money in the heart. Money, 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 I hear you say. You want more money every day. Well, it's the root of all evil. That might be true, but I know you're glad you got some money on you. And I'm not mad. I'm not sad. I'm kind of glad I got some, too. So we beg, borrow, and steal. But what's the big deal? It's only paper, and that's for real. What's so hot? Who cares if you got it? It's just a little piece of paper in your pocket. Now, you could say something really old. Get on up here big and bold. It's only paper, but it stands for gold. You could say it quiet. You could scream and holler. There's no more gold behind the dollar. Way back in the day, 1973, right on out there for you and me and everyone to see, the United States went off the gold standard. Unwind your mind, you can understand it. No box, no locks, don't drop your socks. There's no more gold down in Fort Knox, and we will see the bill sooner or later. What you got in your pocket is a piece of paper, and on that paper we write checks, get stocks, bonds, whatever's next, options, futures, credit card, all based on something we ain't got, hedge fund, derivative, all paper and plastic, something's got to give, because it's not an act, it's a fact, my friend, all paper money comes to a bad end, that's an old, old rule that won't break or bend, all paper money comes to a bad end, and you could say that's a terrible mess, the U.S. government might never confess, but every freaking day, your money's worth less. Put it in the bank or put it in your pocket. Your money's worth less than the day you got it. And when that dollar takes a big fall, the billionaire don't worry at all. He got 10, 11 brokers out in the hall. And when U.S. dollars are going down, he checks out the other money going round. Before your little breakfast hits your little tummy, he trades his dollars for German money or Chinese, whatever money's good, and leave you broke back in the neighborhood where you pay $4 for a loaf of bread, and the landlord wants thousands just to lay your head. So it's only paper, but we never refuse it. First and last, we got to ask, why do we use it? You could get up and make some noise, but no one ever asks for your voice. We use dollars because we got no choice. Down here in the land of milk and honey, what is it that stands behind the money? For your mama, papa, daughter, or son, for every single body under the sun, what makes the system run? It's cops and billy clubs, soldiers and guns. No one never ever asks for your voice. We use dollars because we got no choice. All over the world, power comes from the money system and the barrel of guns. And you could say, I want my money back, but you're hooked like crack. And here's the fact. No one ever asked you, Jack, because money is a tool for who's going to rule over the wise man and the fool. And there's some things that money brings, a little song that money sings. It's never about what people need. It's all about power and greed. Check out the whole world, east to west. It's about some get more and some get less. Look up in front, look back behind. Check your history book down through time. Money is something to keep you in line. And does that got to make you mad or sad? If it's only paper, what makes it bad? It's what we do to get it, what we do when we got it. Did we think about it? Maybe we forgot it. How do we make our money? How do we spend it, Sonny? How you get, how you spend, how do you live? In the end, did you take or give? Because at the risk of getting kind of sappy, money don't seem to make people happy. Look up in the mansion, look down in the dump. How happy really is Donald Trump? Rich people want more and more, day and night. Why so much more if you feel all right? So money's not everything. That may sound corny, but you can't make love with it when you get horny. It's bold, it's cold, but an old story has been told. What good's money if you lose your soul? Straight up, Jack, now whack like crack. You could sell your soul, but you can't buy it back. And if you do not worship money, sure as you're born, the soul you save might be your own. So the money's funny, the change is strange. There's a whole world to rearrange. And before this song gets too long, whatever you think is right or wrong, before the bell's gonna ring, before the fat lady gets to sing, we feel better when we do the right thing. And there is something that we know. We're going to reap just what we sow. You're broke and hungry or a big man in town. What goes around will come around. And far and near, it might be queer, but money's still here and the road is clear. Throw everyone in the whole world right down the middle. No one with too much, No one with too little. Treat your neighbors just like yourself. Same money for them, you and me, and for everybody else. Forget the rich and forget the poor. Close up the bank and open up your door. It's money, 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 money right from the start. Money in the brain, money in the heart. Money, money, money. I hear people say they want more money every day.
All righty. Is he talking about the America we know, or is he not? And we can smile the whole time. Right on, Professor Louis.
All right, Ralph.
Thank you, our liberation poet. Brother Gil, your mic is open. And Sister Ann, I hope you're in the wings. I appreciate you, because I know you two guys are coming from work. And I want to say our special guest is in the house, and
right.
Boy, are we in for it. So, Brother Gil, your mic is open, please.
Yeah, usually I come on and talk about Mumia. I'm not really prepared today. There was a visit yesterday by Johanna and others, but I haven't been brought up to speed on that, so that'll have to wait till next week. So I'll be brief. I just, you know, there are lots of things to worry about, obviously, our political prisoners. There are people who have been continuously under genocide in Yemen and Syria, in Afghanistan, Iraq, in Palestine, and really everywhere in the world under economic attack, you know, including the, you know, the 8 million children who die of preventable causes every year. But right now, obviously, my biggest concern, because there's still time, is Venezuela. What's happening in Venezuela right now is, to me, what the U.S. and Europe are doing is equivalent to what the Nazis did in Spain in the 1930s. But back then, you know, they had Lincoln brigades that went and fought. Unfortunately, I don't feel in America today there is a peaceful, nonviolent anti-war movement that's a mass movement that's going to oppose this, because the peace movement in our country, the mass peace movement, is really embedded in the Democratic Party, who supports the imperialism in Venezuela. I wish we were prepared for armed struggle here in the U.S., but I don't think we are. And so I don't see really the resistance coming from here. I think the people of Venezuela are going to have to defend themselves. They may get help from Cuba. They may get help from Russia and China, I don't know. I don't think, you know, I mean, I'm not saying don't march, and I'm not saying don't do something else, I don't think there's time to come to the rescue of the people in Venezuela. We do need to show them support, but unfortunately, I think the best hopes are the things I just said.
Well, thank you so much for that, Gil. But do not make a decision for other people, because I always say, if those who constantly say it is not time for revolution, it is not time for tactic, this tactic or that tactic, they don't know. And if we waited for them, there would never be any social change. Thanks again for that, Gil.
Yeah, let me agree with you there. I mean, and that comes personal. I mean, you know, we go to these marches and there's 50 or 100 people and we get discouraged. But that was my family in 1962 and 3 marching against Vietnam when there was only 50 people. And, you know, that did lead to larger marches and then eventually to a real revolution by the soldiers in Vietnam themselves. So you're right, Ralph.
Thank you again for that. And next up, Sister Ann Lamb.
Hey, Ralph, how are you? Always an honor to be.
And thank you, Ann. How are you?
Illustrious company. Doing well. I cannot complain too much.
Great.
Since we were talking about Linda Peltier, I have just posted to jerichony.org all the pertinent information so people can email various people at the Bureau of Prisons regarding this assignment of a cellmate. There is a little sample letter that people can use, carefully written by his national office and board of directors. And I think we should definitely do so, because I agree, you know, this is every time he has a cellmate, he ends up getting in trouble for something the cellmate did. That happened to him already in Lewisburg, and he received a disciplinary action, including a transfer to where he is now for contraband that he had nothing to do with. So, you know, this kind of thing is not unusual. And, you know, since he's in the middle of trying to get transferred to FCI Oxford in Wisconsin, it's not surprising that this happens at this time. You know, as we know, U.S. imperialism is an evil, evil, ugly beast, okay? So I would encourage everybody, go to jerichoonline.org. It's probably, I'm sure it's up on whoislindapeltier.info as well. And there are three people there that you can send this email to. And I would encourage everybody to do so, so that the BOP understands that Leonard has support and we are watching what they are doing. So that's very important. Also, up on our website, we have our dear friend Joy Powell, as you know, has been having this ongoing battle to get back into the law library. So that's also very important. She cannot have you know, any kind of meaningful communication with the courts if she can't access the law library. She's working pro se on trying to get her conviction overturned. So she does have assistance of several paralegals who are helping her with this endeavor. But she really does need to access the law library. And it was totally, you know, arbitrary that she was banned from the library. She was actually banned from the library for standing up for some of the other prisoners. So people need to call Commissioner Annucci, and his number is there. Also on jerichoonline.org, right on the first page. Don't have to look for it. And also Bedford Hills. And, you know, state you're calling regarding Joyce Powell, number 07G0632, and request she have access to the prison law library, which is actually her right. Excuse me. It's her right to access the law library. So it's just arbitrary and capricious once again. And that's really important. I just talked with Joy this morning. She said to please tell everybody she sends her regards and thanks everybody who is making those phone calls or writing to Annucci. She really appreciates it and hopes to be able to be back in the law library soon. So those are two.
Well, thank you again for that, Anne. And I'm remembering Lynch in the death camps. She was prohibited from helping other inmates. And they punished for helping other inmates. So we always must remember the continued cruelty of these death camps. And when you say Bedford Hills, I think of Judy Clark. So we must never our political prisoners who fought for us. But I could go on. I'll pass the microphone back to Sister Betty Davis.
All right. We've got Joel and Gwen in the wings. But I want at this point to give a few moments to a very, very special guest who was supposed to be on 2 weeks ago, but because of a serious family responsibilities, was not able to join us, but is really looking forward to making up for that. But before we do that, I want to let you know that there is this campaign, No War on Venezuela, and the International Day of Actions are set for February the 23rd.
Right.
New York City is having an activity on the 23rd, and the planning for that is on this coming Saturday at the International Action Center. I also want to make it clear that the following states will be in solidarity with us: Atlanta, Georgia, Boston, Mass., Houston, Texas, Minneapolis, Portland, Oregon, Tucson, Vancouver, Canada, Washington, D.C., and more states and cities are joining in this. And it's a worldwide protest. And I have to agree with Brother Gil to the extent that I don't know how much we can impact on Venezuela. And one of the things Brother Ralph taught me was that the peace marches were organized by the Vietnamese because they kept fighting and would not stop fighting. And when the people of Venezuela rise up and say, we're not going to take this anymore and kick the imperialists out, then they too will have their freedom. Franz Fanon was right. Nobody can give it to you. You have to take it. So without further ado, I want to take a step outside the program, and I want to acknowledge a very special person who we, most of us on the call, we do know her. Her name is Sister Collier Clark, and Sister Collier has an incredible history.
Yes, she do.
If present, she is the co-coordinator of the Guadalupe Haitian Tour, and she's also a producer on MNN Public Television. She is responsible for many of the special programs around civil rights. She is a committed Pan-Africanist who has worked in the area of what we call human rights. She's currently involved in certain programs for the rights of the homeless, and she's closely aligned with the Eco-Socialist Horizons. She is one of the founders of SNCC, the Black Belt Alabama Voter Education Project in 1963. So without further ado, I'd like to ask you, we're going to give a few minutes of our program to Sister Collier, and we're going to end up with Gwen and Joel, and we hope you guys will hang in there and comment. Sister Collier, it is such an honor to have you. Your mic is open.
Oh, it's always an honor being here with you, with Raph, Remembering Land, with Brother Pinckney, and with everybody that's here. I know everybody's on the show, so I mean, thank you, Betty, for the strange introduction. That can't be me, but thank you very much. February is a power-packed Black History Month with many key experiences in the African Prisoners of War descendants of U.S. slavery. But we've had the mention of Venezuela, and we have to remember in the U.S., that anytime you talk about Central, South America, and the Caribbean, and what's called Canada, you're talking about us. Because we were exchanged back and forth during the period of enslavement between these areas. So we have relatives in all zones. But when it comes to Venezuela, we need to be clear that the Monroe Doctrine has been pulled out, brushed up, and we can look at it this time as we should have been looking at it across the ages, because this doctrine is merely the fulfillment of George Washington's statement in 1787 before the Continental Congress that the goal of the U.S., the goal of the new republic, would be to destroy the whoop along with the native, moving westward and establishing a base in the west, what we call California, and from there southward to create the European empire in the western world. And that is what this has all been about, total control of the western hemisphere. Venezuela, though, has been really wonderful. In the last 2 years, they have had an international opening with the socialist eco-socialist international peace on water in Venezuela, looking at the critical point where we stand where water is running out on the planet. So I just want to make sure that we embrace Venezuela, that we don't turn away from it, that we don't wait for people to call us out. We should call ourselves out, because Venezuela has always been a part of the revolutionary struggles in the Western world. But February is here, and it's the last half, in the last half of the 20th century. It was a key day for the civil rights movement, February 1. Four young men take a seat at Woolworth in Greensboro, North Carolina, followed by a national uprising at lunch counters, beaches, food halls, whatever else was available across the country. What this movement does is that it establishes a base for Dr. King's organization, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, really for Dr. King, and they will use it as a springboard. And King will go from there into this fame that we know him for now. But we need to look at King as we look at SNCC and we look at Urban League and we look at all of the groups that were involved in this 1960s piece that included labor, that included the church bases, all of the religious institutions, including the Jewish institutions, all are involved in this 1960s piece called the Civil Rights Movement. We need to take a very critical look at it because, you know, at times we fall apart. One day we're together, the next day we're not. But we need to remember the Black revolutionary Carter G. Woodson. And that's critical because he talks about the miseducation of the Negro. And as we stand here today looking back from February 1, across the last 70, 60 years, we've got to be clear that we are talking about the miseducation of the Negro, the Africans, the Latins, poor whites, because they are not, we do not separate poor whites from black folks. You're making a big mistake because the Appalachian region is the same poverty. We're in the same fields together at the same hour of history. They have a few more problems about being able to work with us. So we need to look at that, too. But they were programmed. So we need to remember we are talking about the poor of a nation. But we're talking about a time period in which Malcolm X is leaving us in February 21, 65. The Shining Prince, the extraordinary leader and historian Malcolm X, is assassinated. At the same time, Dr. King is being pushed up further on the ladder because in 65 we get what? We get a Voting Rights Act. 64 we get a Civil Rights Act. We'll begin to get all kinds of amendments and whatever else associated with it around affirmative action, and we'll see pardon of the ways of some of these companies that we started out with, particularly the Jewish people when it came to issues of affirmative action. But I want to go back there because if we go back there, we need to take another look at King, because the King that we've been talking about, we don't really know this man. I am very surprised at how little I knew about his early company and people who worked to bring him on the stage. We know him as the nonviolent man. We always refer to Gandhi, and we see Gandhi now in a number of ways, and a lot of them not too real. In fact, the nation of Ghana just pulled down Gandhi's statue last year. So Gandhi himself has issues as we go across time. But King comes on stage, and immediately one of the oldest warriors in the country, a brother named Thurman, will move in on this young man and begin to talk with him to see what he can do to hook up with him. So when King is stabbed here in New York City, Thurman appears, who's a historian, and really an international human rights advocate, really. But Thurman had been out here at the time period with Du Bois and company, out on the battlefield, same age as Dr. King's daddy, out here really working, doing some hard work around putting together the international community. In 29, he goes into India, where he meets with a number of people, and before he will leave, he will meet with Gandhi. He will meet with Booker T. Washington before Booker T. Washington sends to the NAACP journal, headed by Du Bois, a little piece that says, "Let not the 12 million Negroes be ashamed of the fact that they are grandchildren of slaves. There's no dishonor in being slaves. There's dishonor in being slave owners. But let us not think of honor or dishonor in connection with the past. Let us realize that the future is with those who would be truthful, pure, and loving." But now the good thing about looking at this piece, you began to understand King and violence. Because a lot of folk were shocked at his death when you look at an edited volume on his life. There is a little small last article in there from Dr. King, a little essay, about 42 or 43 pages, where King says he embraces the violence. I embrace it. He understands it. He understands that black men who have been under what they have been, he didn't say women, sisters, what they have been under across all these hundreds of years, at some point will rage. But that's a natural reaction. He doesn't say that he's for violence, but he embraces the violence. He understands that in any revolutionary struggle, any struggle, you have nonviolent, no violent, and violent forces. That's just human reality. And we need to look at human reality if we as black people are to build a movement in this country. We need to build one, folks. We've got to build our movement. So, dishonor. There's no dishonor in violence. It is if it's loose violence, raping and going around, jumping people just because you can, unorganized, without goals and objectives, there is dishonor in that. I say that
right
for
on.
King. And so we need to begin to go back to this hour when we have got to begin to talk about Dr. King's taking this strong stand just before his death. So this is all 65 and beyond. In 67, you know, he says, I got to break the silence. He comes out against the Vietnam War. But before then, he has a wonderful little book that comes out that says, where do we go from here? Community or chaos? We need to look at that and begin to relook at Dr. King and try to get some of the stuff that we went through in our youth. And I say it because in our youth, some of us, you know, we are opposed to violence, and others are, we need to violence. So we had all this struggle among ourselves without clarity in our dialogue. But we need to look now with some clarity as Dr. King takes his lead from Dr. Thurman. Dr. Thurman was also at Howard University on Howard's staff. And Dr. Thurman was not a normal kind of person, you know. He was a radical, radical. So we might see him as being a bit strange in that, yes, he comes out with this great history, but at the same time, Thurman is saying, look, when I was with Gandhi, Gandhi made it clear that he didn't understand why Africans in the United States were following Christianity. I'm not jumping you Christians. I'm just going to tell you a little bit of truth from Dr. Thurman. Because Christianity was the religion of the slave masters, of the enemy. In India, they rejected Christianity because it was the religion of the colonizer. So they had a problem understanding why we had taken on this religion and fallen so in love with it and created all kinds of rituals around it. So Thurman brings that to King, and when King is stabbed here in New York City, Thurman gets an opportunity to spend some quality time with the young man that he'd been trying to hook up with, and they become very close friends. He's able to come in. He gets Dr. King to spend an extra 2 weeks in New York to just rest, man, and really uncover who you are. So it's here that Dr. King begins to reconcile what with this nonviolent stuff that he's talking about with the realities of human life. Because the reality is we live in a very violent America. The reality is nobody talks about blacks who fight back in America. And we have a long history of fight back blacks, including my family and others. Now, people who say, you come up here shooting at me, you're going to get shot. Even if I got to find some hickory nuts and put them in a shooter, I ain't going to give that shooter a name, and pop you with, you're going to get shot one way or the other, but you're not getting out of here. So we know that is reality. That's the reality of our existence. The problem has been that the state and the U.S. state has been aligned against us in the law and in just our living realities, so that we have not been able to organize and keep an organized force for any long period of time. So King had an even more expansive vision when he laid out the case for the guaranteed income in his final book. He talked about a guaranteed annual income. We need to look at that. What does that mean? Talk about, you know, we got ripped up the poor by attacking the root causes of their impoverishment one by one. Providing better housing, better education, better support for families. But these efforts have been too small and too disorganized. Moreover, he wrote, the programs of the past all have another common failing. They are indirect. Each seeks to solve poverty by first solving something else. So we need to say to America, we are tired of something else. We want a guaranteed annual income. He was for socialized medicine. Let's call it that, not Obamacare. Called the socialized medicine would be much easier to understand. In other words, the nation should provide for its citizens that which is needed for humans to live on this planet. So for health care, he was strong. But then we come down to us. We are at the very bottom of the ladder. And I know just because time is short, so I'm going to wrap this up. We have in the Congress something called H.R. 40. It's a reparations bill. The person who brought it there was John Conyers, and we know they've knocked him off. He's gone now, and probably for some good reasons, but he is gone. But H.R. 40 is there, that reparations bill that we need to force the Congress to bring to our black congressmen to fight to bring to the floor, to bring everything else to the floor. But when it comes to the issues of their own people, the Black Congressional Caucus and the Congress, which loves black folk when they need some votes, do not deal with our issues directly. So we're now talking about being at the bottom of the U.S. economy, the bottom of that ladder, with the criminal justice system stacked on top of African descendants like bales of cotton. From daycare to incarceration is more a fact than a fiction. Police shootings without cause and few convictions. Health and African, for health care for Africans and their descendants, and infants and to adulthood, is poor. And I'm having that struggle now with my son, you know, just trying to force Medicare to be able to pay for some bills Otherwise, you wind up, if they don't take it, you got to have some money, because you're going to be paying $15,000 a month just to take care of your family member. Education is poor, and more black children are forced out of the education system at very young ages. I'm hunted by a five-year-old girl being handcuffed at school. Her teacher thought the child was going to be hit, was going to hit her.
Huh.
Can you imagine a five-year-old standing with a grown woman and a grown woman looking at a child, you're talking about, she was, don't hit me. And you handcuffed a little girl? Young girls are dismissed from school for wearing their hair natural. Black teen girls expelled or placed in detention for reasons that are at best suspicious. As far as the present administration is concerned, the Caribbean and Africa are in the words of our present, I guess we can call him a president, shithole nations.
Yep.
And Venezuela would fit into that. All of this, Puerto Rico, the whole Caribbean, Central America, fit into that, because if America can take the largest oil supply on earth from Venezuela, she will, and reduce it to less than what Trump calls a shithole nation. So as we look at that, we need to be very clear. As far as the present administration is concerned, the Caribbean and Africa not only shithole nations, but we've got to keep our ears and eyes open. Nobody's marching about Trump sending into, and most of you know, even though it's happened, Trump sent to an American brigade to the Dahomey, right next door to the Congo, just in case the election in the Congo did not turn out to favor the Catholic Church, the UN agencies on the ground in the Congo, and the United States and its businesses and other European businesses. Well, the election didn't turn out as they thought it would, so they haven't been able to give a good reason for using that force yet, but I haven't seen anything that says that Trump has withdrawn that force of troops that was sent into Dahomey to be able to invade the Congo if they did not like the new president of the Congo. By the way, the new president did not come out to be who we favored, but the one that we thought we were going to get didn't get elected either, so now we're making up new reasons to remain in the Congo. Africans in the USA and everywhere, the issue of reparations is urgent. 400 years, this is the 400th year. Ghana is calling us to task. Ghana is saying, come home. For those who want to come home, pack your bags. But Trump has done something different. We now have created new visa laws which will block the Ghanaians who came here from Ghana recently from just being able to go home. They got to go through the visa stuff. But Ghana said, no, you can have visa on arrival. Don't worry about it. Come on home. So we need to begin to look carefully at this hour of history, at Trump and all of the clowns he creates. But look at Schumer. Look at the Democratic Party. Look at their haste to pull away from the Women's March. Why? Because they didn't like a young woman's relationship with Farrakhan. She said she liked Farrakhan. Farrakhan was in her estimation. Why? Is that a reason to pull out of a march? We need to look at all of these things. We're in a critical hour, and for the USA, the Africans had better prepare ourselves, organize ourselves from the criminal justice system outward. And I did say from the criminal justice system because our youth are being tossed in there outward because we have no right to credit. We can't get insurance. It is very difficult to get loans because you can't get insurance. So we're cut out of the capital piece. We are cut out, folk, of health care and health. And our health is not improving. It's like the white health in this country. It's going down. But we've all raised at the bottom. They're just falling down on us. We have to look at housing and what's happening with housing. I was looking at the prison last week with all that freezing weather, and you're telling me that these young people don't have power? What's going on? Locked in this system without power? When you're in sub-zero weather? Then I look at housing itself, and I'm always looking, Betty and Raph, at housing in Brooklyn, because I can see it better through Fort Greene Tenants Association, see it better when I'm looking at the Fort Greene housing, and I'm talking about public housing, with people being tossed out and are not receiving basic services, with somebody saying they got lead. Lead issues were issues of the 1960s and early 70s. We went after lead poisoning on the wall, killing little guys and little dogs, and landlords didn't care about it all. That was the mood at that time. We're still talking about lead now. Where? and public housing. We're talking about filth of all kinds. We're talking about places falling apart. Water
We said we had a guest, and we were going to be educated. But I'm going to have to cut you off and ask you to come back again with more education.
I'll be back, Ralph. I'm sorry. Let me apologize for not having been able to be here. But it's hard for me to deal with that thing in the Christian Bible that says, let the dead. Jesus is saying, let the dead bury the dead. My son is not dead yet, so it's hard for mama to pull away.
For anything, your history takes you beyond apologizing for anything you do. Next, we have, thank you, Koya. Look forward to hearing you. Again, Joe Myers, your mic is open. Gwen Goodwin, hang in there. Joe, your mic is open.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, it's been a very polarizing week. It seems things are getting more polarized as things go. And that means that the struggle is picking up momentum, although so far it hasn't manifested itself even to return to the days when it was a large anti-war movement that could turn out a few hundred thousand people every few weeks or every few months, at least to protest and demonstrate against the war and raise consciousness among the general population that used to automatically snap to and stand at attention and wax misguidedly patriotic in times of war. Now there's a very different attitude, like who's getting rich off this war, who's investing for being protected, and why are we out there murdering millions of people at the, you know, they talk about school shootings and everything else, which is a problem, even say if one lunatic shoots up a school, but that's very small in comparison with the hundreds of thousands and millions of people that are killed by the U.S. war machine and totally supported and certainly not looked at as the much bigger lunatics than the school shooters are, certainly in terms of scale, and all done in the name of, what, democracy. Wherever they go, they bring democracy on their bayonets, like they're fighting for democracy in Venezuela by supporting the loser of the last election who supported imperialist connected. And if you notice those demonstrations, Venezuela is not by any means an all-white country, but those demonstrations against the Venezuelan government, which is now under siege, are almost all-white. And that reflects the fact that it's an upright, it's one of those what they call color revolutions, except this color, this, you know, they have an orange one and a green one, and this is a white middle class and upper class rebellion against the government that was trying to represent the interests of the poor and the oppressed, and still is. And as Maduro said, he is not backing down. He does not want to be a traitor. And we should all rally to that cry and extend it to our attitude towards the rest of the world, that we want people to break with imperialism, overthrow it, and destroy it utterly, and support every battle against it that limits its control and its violence and its oppression. So I know there's not much time left, so I'll cut it off here.
Thank you. And Gwen Goodwin, just say hello for us. We know you're there, and we want you to come
hello.
On first next.
She's got time for a few
hello.
Thoughts. Gwen, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that Joel is right about all of what he said. My second thought is that this presidential speech tonight is a load of crap. I've been going in and out listening to it and talking about all the jobs and the prosperity in America. And the one thing I've been listening for very carefully was whether they were going to mention the potential war that's coming up in Venezuela. And so far, nothing has been said. So I guess we're leaving at 10 o'clock tonight, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to sign off then because it's 9:59.
We want to give everybody the chance to get back and hear the rest of the, you know, the sound and fury signifying nothing.
Yes. Yes.
Well, love you, love you, love you. Good evening.
Educate.
Thank you.
To be free.